Hi, this is Carla Allen, host of School Counseling Opportunities and Professional Engagement, also known as SCOPE. I am a professional school counselor, currently a coordinator of counseling services for my school division, an adjunct professor for counselor education at a local university, Virginia Commonwealth. Go Rams! We will be discussing topics relevant to current trends in school counseling and ideas on how to provide support to one another. For questions, comments, or discussion topics, email me at vscaprofdevelopment@gmail.com. Again, that's vscaprofdevelopment@gmail.com. Welcome to SCOPE.
School Counselor Opportunity and Professional Engagement SCOPE.
From the third floor.
Today we are talking to a group of middle school counselors who have taken the delivery system of small groups to the next level. I know that many of us as school counselors struggle to find time to run small groups or to get student and faculty buy-in. This team has come up with some innovative and creative ideas, and I'm excited for them to share with you some of their small group initiatives. Welcome to the third floor. Today we have with us three middle school counselors. I will introduce each of them, and they would then tell us about their journey, about how they became a school counselor. First of all, we have Angie LaPeter. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
So tell us about your journey of becoming a school counselor.
Well, I started out as a teacher. I had wanted to be a teacher since I was probably 10 years old. And after about 3 years, I started thinking, well, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. So I started thinking about what I wanted to do, and I realized I was more interested in their social and emotional learning and the lessons that the school counselor was teaching when she was coming into the classroom. And so my third year of teaching, I went back to school for my master's in counseling, continued to teach and get my master's at night. And then ended up loving teaching and stayed in teaching for a while until a position opened up. So all in all, I ended up teaching for 12 years, and I have been in counseling for 14, as well as staying home for several years with my own children.
Well, we have almost identical counseling journeys, as I also started in the classroom and then went back to school at night and then became a counselor after teaching for a lot of years. I want to transition now to Becky Collier, who has a very different story about how she became a school counselor. So, Becky, tell us a little bit about your journey.
Hi, thank you for having me. So, this is my seventh year as a school counselor, and in those 7 years, I've been at four different schools.
Wow.
Two high schools and two middle schools. And I would certainly consider myself a career switcher. So when I went to college, I was a big golfer, and athletics was a huge part of who I was, who I am.
Were you in college on a golf scholarship?
Yes.
So I want to say that because you were that good.
Was. but yes, so that was a huge part of my life. And so when I graduated college, I had nailed down a position as the program coordinator at the First Tee of Chesterfield. And for those who aren't familiar, that is an awesome nonprofit program focused towards underprivileged children. So that really sparked my interest, I guess you would say, in working with kids. I worked with kids from age 7 to 17 and really used golf as the avenue to instill those core values and life skills. So somehow along that way, I realized I don't want to stay in the golf business forever because of the hours. And at the time, I was dating now my husband, who is also in education, and he is actually the one who said, you know, you should look into either teaching or being a school counselor. And so I ended up going to VCU, receiving my master's in school counseling, and here I am.
And we're so glad you're here. So that's such an interesting journey from working for a nonprofit. And I really enjoy hearing about that First Tee program because I had not heard of that until I met you. So what a great opportunity to work with kids
that's
give you good background for transitioning to school counseling. And thirdly, today we have Melissa Lukow, and Melissa has a little bit of a cold today, so in case you hear some coughing, she's trying to work through that today. So Melissa, tell us about how you became a school counselor.
Sure. Thank you for having me. I am in my second year as a school counselor, and like Becky, I'm a career switcher. So I went to undergrad for political science and came out of undergrad actually using that political science degree. I worked in politics as a fundraiser, worked on political campaigns, and then ended up working in state government for about 12 years. And through that journey, started to really focus on education policy and working at the State Department of Education, supporting the Board of Education, doing policy research, policy development in the area of K-12 education. And that was really a passion for me. I really liked that area of focus, but I missed that connection mm-hmm. on a day-to-day basis with students and families. It felt a little bit removed. And so I kind of went the opposite direction of everybody at the Department of Education, and went back down to the school level, like others, getting my master's at night. Also kind of made the decision to go back to school right around the time, unfortunately, school shootings are still happening, but mm-hmm. this was like right around Sandy Hook. And mm-hmm. I just realized, like, I want to be making a bigger impact. I want to do something. You know, at that time I didn't have children, but now I do. And like mm-hmm. the idea of them going to a school and just what role can I play to help prevent that?
Right.
So that's kind of really what pushed me into the counseling aspect of being in a school community.
Mm-hmm.
And so happy I did.
Yeah. And I always love hearing people's stories about how they came into the profession. All three of you came from very different backgrounds and getting to the same space and now all working together on the same team. So we're talking today about running small groups. And I know as counselors, we struggle with this delivery system sometime because it's difficult to get student buy-in. It's difficult to get faculty buy-in because they look at us taking time away from instruction. And even sometimes the administrator buy-in as to why it's important to run small groups. So, Angie, you've been at your school for the longest, and you are a director of school counseling there for a while.
Right.
So when we first started talking about small groups at your school in particular, this was an initiative we had started in incorporating a comprehensive counseling program. So we had talked about how those were working at your middle school. So tell us a little bit about some of the barriers that you encountered when we first started going into a comprehensive counseling program.
Okay. Well, I think the main barrier was just finding time. I had come from an elementary setting where small groups were a lot easier because students were in one classroom all day. You could pull the students and the teachers were able to kind of catch them back up when they went back to class. In middle school, with the block scheduling, it was a little more challenging because teachers didn't want them to be pulled out of their class.
Mm-hmm. So when you say block scheduling, what is that for your school in particular?
Right. So they have four blocks a day. So they may have in one day, you know, their language arts, their math, their PE, and their science.
Mm-hmm.
The next day they would have their history, an elective, you know, an ACE, and, you know, that
right.
type of thing. And each teacher, of course, wants their students for their full block. But we, you know, we were obviously required to run groups. We wanted to run groups. It was the best way to see the most students. So we tried different things. We, in the beginning, we tried to do lunch groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the first year or two run some lunch groups. And then after the first couple of years, we went to staggered lunches,
mm-hmm.
which made lunch time very challenging.
So what are some of the challenges you run into at lunch groups?
The students that wanted to sign up for a particular group wouldn't have the same lunch times.
Oh, yeah.
So are they, you know, they may be 10 minutes apart. So by the time they got, you know, got to the cafeteria, got their lunch, and got to the space provided for the group, you know, we may have 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And students in middle school want to be in their classes. You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't really want to miss their class. You may think they would want to miss math class or, you
and
know,
they also don't want to miss their lunch time.
But they don't
so
want to miss their lunch,
And you think about, too, we look at what's what works best for kids, and if they're in structured time all day and they aren't allowed to talk or necessarily interact, that's their social time.
Right.
So when you're trying to do a lunch group, you're also having to think about, oh, I'm pulling them from that social time, which is also very important.
Right. So if they had friends in the group, that was one thing. But if they didn't, then, you know, that was challenging. So that kind of fell to the wayside after a couple of years. So in our school, we have what we call flex, or a home-based period that is about 30 minutes.
So somebody explain a little bit of what flex looks like.
So at our school, our flex time is about 30 minutes after lunch. And on Mondays, we have what we call PBIS lessons. Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, we have, it can be used for remediation for many students, or to see, you know, various teachers if they've missed a day of school or to make up a quiz. Friday, what is Friday?
We have different things each Friday. We have clubs on Friday. We have sustained silent reading, and then we have mindfulness lessons, and then team spirit.
Yeah, so it's definitely a great use of time that now, as our program, I think, has grown over the last couple of years, we are included. Our counseling department is included in a lot of those things.
That's
which is
great.
Awesome. Personally for me to come into. And I think just communication on our behalf and from our department with our grade level teams and our grade level teachers is huge, because they do realize the importance of our role and how we help students.
Mm-hmm. So that didn't happen overnight. I know that took some advocacy work on all of your parts to get the teacher buy-in, collecting data to show this is why we need to do it. So talk a little bit about that part, about how you advocated with teachers and administrators to get that time during flex to work with kids.
I think it started with showing a need for it. So I know we all do a needs assessment at the beginning of the year, asking the students if they're interested in participating in a small group, what are maybe some of the topics that we have done in the past, and they can kind of check off the ones that they're interested in. So I know that was very helpful for me in showing my teachers that these students indicated multiple areas of interest, and that they really want to do a group. And then also involving the teachers as part of that process. We have team meetings as part of our the way our school is set up, and so that is a great opportunity to, when a teacher brings up a student concern, you know, whether it's academic or personal social, say, well, I have a group that would meet that need, since that has been another way to get their buy-in. And then on the back end, sharing out the data, whether it's academic, you know, do they have less missing classwork because we've helped them in an organization type group, or do they having less discipline referrals because they've been in a, you know, kind of a self-regulation or anger management group.
Mm-hmm.
So going back then and showing them those data points.
So go ahead.
I was going to say one thing that I did 2 years ago, during my team with all of my teachers, is I did really the same exact mindfulness lessons I did with my students. My students did, you know, make and take activities with mindfulness bags. So everything that they were learning, I did with my teachers and team, and they each had a bag for their classroom, so that they were seeing, this is what I'm doing with my students. And then you can use this with your students. So again, it helped them understand what groups were and the importance of groups. And
that's a great idea to get buy-in. So how did that go over with them?
I mean, the majority loved it and thought it was wonderful. You always, I think, have one or two teachers
definitely.
That are a little hesitant, but overall they seem to really enjoy. You just take a 2 or 3 minutes and do a mindfulness activity, and I think any time that you're giving them something to take back and use in their classroom, it's a good thing.
So when we talk about running groups and as a counselor running the group, sometimes there's stigma among the students or sometimes the parents for them to say, oh, why are you going to a counseling group? And maybe they don't want to participate because of that stigma or to be pulled out to be in groups. So what are some things you all have done to change that stigma or the mindset of parents and students to join the groups?
I think that we would all agree that it all goes back to building those relationships with students and your teachers and their families. Like Melissa said, we all do that needs assessment, and we talk about how, you know, we plan on using their input throughout the school year. And obviously that changes as they mature and go through their grade as well. And then maybe the needs that arise during the school year. I think we are really lucky in our setting. We are on our grade level hallways, so those relationships come very naturally. We see the students when they come in, you know, in the mornings off the bus. We see them at lunch. We see them throughout the day. We see them when they're leaving. And so I think building those relationships has been very helpful, just to kind of get their buy-in to understand here's our role as a school counselor and here's how we can help you. And, you know, what do you need? How can we help you in the school setting? I have also experimented too. You know, I think peer influence at our level, you know, is huge. And so sometimes that stigma of, you know, why are you going to see the counselor? What's wrong with you? I will often ask students maybe who are reluctant to, you know, who's a friend that you trust? Why don't we invite your friend to be a part of our group? And if they're interested and you guys want to stick through it, that way they don't feel like they're being targeted and something's wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have had huge success with that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I haven't.
Right.
And that's okay. I think just being flexible when running groups is also really important.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, you want them to be comfortable. You want them to feel the support and just create that safe environment to just remind them that that's why we're here.
So let's talk a little bit about the setup of your school, because that may be unique to, I know, Becky, the middle school that you came from didn't have what we call teams.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a different model for you. So your school is set up that you have the same students all 3 years of middle school. So you follow them 6th through 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, you're on their hallway. So y'all change offices every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That seat right there, that stresses me out. I have to change an office every year. But you move
declutter.
To their That's hallway right. with them. Yeah. So yeah, definitely decluttering and getting all your stuff on a cart and moving. But you also change teacher teams every year. So it's building that relationship every year because y'all work in teams at each grade level. So Melissa, you mm-hmm. have 6th grade right now, 7th grade. So then you will have to move up to 8th grade mm-hmm. team next year. So that's another level of building those relationships. But the prior counselor has already kind of taught them what that looks like. So that model works really well for the three of you because you're all doing the same work.
Mm-hmm.
So the teacher's already trained in what that looks like by the time you get to them.
And I think that's part of what the importance of the comprehensive school counseling program. It's not that each counselor is doing their own thing. It is more consistent for the teachers and the students that they're all getting those services on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So when I go up to 8th grade, the 8th grade teachers are already used to their students participating in groups and that kind of thing mm-hmm. because it's a school-wide comprehensive program.
Right. And that too, the needs assessments could be different for each grade level.
Mm-hmm.
So you might be running different groups, but your delivery systems are the same. So that consistency, I think, really helps with the faculty buy-in. And they can see the need for the group instead of it. And I know sometimes the older model would be like, oh, I have this great group that I ran one time. I'm going to pull it out and do it again. Because we're comfortable doing that. And I remember the old standby of study skills. I'm going to run a study skills group. And then you couldn't get the buy-in or the kids to come. And then you would get discouraged and say, well, I'm not going to do a group because they're not coming. But we were not asking them what they wanted. We were saying, this is what I'm comfortable running, so I'm going to do it because this is what I like to do. So I love the model of doing a needs assessment and then bringing the kids in. So this segues to our next question. Instead of pulling out the old lesson plan and dusting it off and running it again and then saying, we don't do groups at our school because the kids aren't going to show up. So instead of doing that, in the past, sometimes we've said that. Y'all flip that model instead of saying, we're not going to do this because there are too many barriers. Y'all figured out how to overcome the barriers to run their groups in spite of that. So talk a little bit about some things that you did to overcome those barriers instead of saying, no, we're not going to be able to run a group. We're going to do it because we did this instead. So how did you reframe some of that?
I think think for me, I kind of tried to broaden the groups. Again, thinking, like you said, that study skills or anger management or friendship that maybe I had done mm-hmm. in the past, I tried to broaden that, trying to get more students to join, to be able to come, going back to that lunchtime, you know, how can I get a larger group to be able to come at the same time? And then now I'm doing that during that flex time. And then I also just try to think, what are middle school students enjoying? What do I enjoy? Because I knew if I enjoyed the groups that it would be, you know, easier to run the groups mm-hmm. and I would be enthused and hopefully then the students would be enthused. I enjoy art. I enjoy reading. Kids always are complaining that they're coming from elementary to middle school and not getting to be outside, having recess. So that's kind of what I was brainstorming on mm-hmm. when I started doing some new groups. So I have expressing yourself through art groups. I have book clubs. I have walk and talk groups.
Love them.
The kids can, when they're expressing themselves through art, and when I'm introducing that, I do talk about, you know, that is a time to share their feelings and their thoughts. It's not just, oh, we're creating art. You know, mm-hmm. I do talk about it in a counseling role aspect. But they are a little bit more free to come up with their own topics to discuss. They support each other and things that are happening in their lives. Same thing with the book club. I choose books that have middle school themes like loss, bullying, academic struggles. And then I read the book prior, pick out different topics and passages, and then bring those up during the group. And then we discuss those as how they relate in our own lives. And then again, they mm-hmm. support each other. And I usually don't have to, you know, go get them.
Yeah,
they're eager to come. I mean, every once in a while, you know, the teachers say, well, they need to make up this math test or they need to do, you know, they're behind in something. And again, just advocating for our program and teaching the teachers the importance of those, you know, building relationships and how important that is for their academics,
right.
too.
So I'm going to jump in and tell a little story on you, Angie, because when you first started brainstorming, doing all these groups, I came over to meet with you because it was mind-boggling to me, all these great ideas you were coming up with. So as we were meeting, we were talking about your needs assessment and what you were going to run, and you, unfortunately, because I came, had to cancel a group that day. So as the bell rang, the kids came running up to the door, and you'd put a sign on the door that they weren't having group. And I could hear them out there, oh, no, there's no group today. They were so upset they weren't having group, and I would just... I just look at you like, what? You have a great thing going here. Instead of, you know, having to pull them to come to group and make sure they're there, and they were running to you and then were upset group wasn't happening. Because I think you framed that perfectly. It's something that you love to do. You're passionate about it, but you're also meeting the needs of the kids, which makes them want to participate. So I know you all presented at BSCA on small groups. So talk about some of the groups that you're running. You alluded to a few of them, Angie, but if y'all would just expand a little bit on some of the groups that you have going on, because they are so exciting and fun and cool, and your kids are doing amazing things with the groups that you're running. So Melissa, you want to tell us about your couple of your groups?
Speaking kind of going back a little bit to kind of reducing that stigma around being in the counseling groups, one of my favorite things that I did last year was a less structured, a little bit more flexible group, but I think it still met those needs. I called it a flex stress busting group. So I threw out the general topic of stress relieving activities, and it was not a set number of students every week. They were allowed to sign up. I put a sign up sheet out of my office on Monday morning, and I had to end up limiting it to 25 kids.
Oh, my word.
But they would, like, race to sign up.
Wow.
And were really disappointed if they got there and all the spots had been filled. And, it's, you know, we did some fun activities. We got them outside. Sometimes we would go on a rainbow walk for mindfulness. Mm-hmm. Or one time we played kickball. We did sidewalk chalk around positive messages, encouraging messages for their peers. We did yoga outside. And honestly, it was mostly boys who don't normally run to counseling groups. And I remember at the beginning of this year when I did my needs assessment with them, they said, I want you to do that group that you did last year. Can we do that again? Mm-hmm. So I think that was a good way to kind of break down that stigma of spending time with a counselor. And I think they learned some self-regulation lessons, mm-hmm. or just coping strategies, and had fun doing it.
Good.
That it can be fun. And then I think one of the other things that I've learned this year in terms of thinking about different ways to deliver the message. So the message is the most important thing to deliver. Maybe I am not the best one to deliver that. Maybe it's reaching out. I've reached out and I have 7 juniors and seniors at our adjoining the high school that's next door to mm-hmm. us that come over and do a mentoring group with my more challenging boys. And that's been really helpful because they relate so much to them. Mm-hmm. And I think the boys really look forward to it. And I tell them kind of the things I want them to focus on. I give them ideas for activities and lessons. But then they're the ones sending the message.
Gotcha. Love it. So, Becky, what are some of the groups that you're doing?
So, on that note, just to piggyback on what Melissa said, I also, with 8th graders this year, am planning towards the end of the spring to, I have lined up with our neighbor high school to invite some of their juniors over to help me lead a couple sessions with students maybe who, mm-hmm. I haven't named the group, but maybe who are feeling a little uneasy or anxious about their transition to high school, because that is a big transition. So that is a group I'm excited about, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with sometimes that message doesn't need to come directly from us, but we include the folks that maybe they're a little bit more receptive to. So just including other students, I'm excited about doing that. Grow group was a anxiety group that I actually did a girls group and a boys group. You had the privilege of seeing my boys mm-hmm. in action. And then I am starting, thanks to Angie, my book club tomorrow. Okay. And I've never done a book club, so I'm stepping out of my comfort zone and I'm excited.
Good.
I have sticky notes in my book mm-hmm. of some of the passages that I plan to pull out and used with those students. Mm-hmm. I'm excited about that.
So I did want to add in on the boys group that I observed with you, and these are your at-risk boys, mm-hmm. And I hate using that terminology, but mm-hmm. They have already had suspensions, they've had some substance use, some mm-hmm. of them, and they're mm-hmm. in 8th grade, so right. that's really worrisome when you think about them being that age, and they're already dealing with such adult issues. But the thing I found interesting when I watched that group, because they have this tough exterior, but they really did have some really good conversations with you because you talked about that relationship piece earlier. Mm-hmm. And I did note as they were leaving, one of the guys came up to you and said, "Is it okay if I come and talk to you later about some things I have going on?" Mm-hmm. And that, Becky, right there just sums it all up, because he came to that group, got over the stigma, he's participating, and then he saw you as his adult connection in that building and felt comfortable to come and talk to you. That's what it's all about right there, that he has somebody now that he can come and talk to. So when you're talking about needs assessments and data, you don't need a whole bunch of big numbers. You've got the one kid that finally has somebody that he's going to come and talk
right.
to.
That's right.
So, Angie, let's talk about a few of your creative group ideas, because that's the thing that you love. And you've come up with some really great things that I don't know if I've ever seen them done before. So, especially your... when we do groups, sometimes we get the idea, like, let's all come in and sit around this table and have a conversation. But you've really taken this to the next level of a group doesn't have to be that. You started the walk and talk groups, getting them. We've all talked about getting them outside. So what are some other things that you've done with that, with being creative and looking at how groups are done?
I think probably the most creative one I do is my art group. Again, you said something earlier about the main thing is having that connection. And when they're coming in and they're creating the art, you're just able to make those connections, to talk with them, to share with each other, and then you know that they will come back to you later if there's deeper things going on. But the art group, Pinterest is wonderful. So I'm not saying I'm coming up with all these wonderful creative ideas.
Well, go ahead and take the credit.
I love to go on Pinterest and, you know, find all these wonderful things, and I just say I'm going to do it. You know, one of the ideas I had last year, it was using a mannequin head, and they used it like a vision board. Mm-hmm. I think most people kind of know what that is. When you make a creative vision board, it's putting on your vision board what you want out of life. And so we took the mannequin heads and magazines and stickers, and they were able to just create. They used words like art and college and, you know, pets and cooking and just things that they enjoyed. And then things were dark, you know, they put, you know, they maybe blacked out their eyes. We had some students that were dealing with the depression and anxiety in the group. So there was darker things on their mannequin heads. And when they shared them with each other at the end of, you know, maybe 3 weeks of working on these, the support that the girls, this was a group of all girls, just listening to the support they gave each other and saying, I think you're so brave and I think you're so beautiful. You know, that was just so powerful to me that mm-hmm. they got that kind of support in this group.
Mm-hmm. It gives them ways to have conversation that they haven't been given before.
Right. We're not just sitting around a circle at a table asking questions and, you know, trying to pull these things out of mm-hmm. them. And hopefully if we're doing this from 6th grade to 7th grade to 8th grade, you know, by 8th grade, if there's deeper things going on, they will have that relationship.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you first started doing this, the Walk and Talk group, I think was one of your original groups.
Yeah.
And you may have gotten comments about, like, why is she out there walking around with them?
Right.
And you had expressed a little concern about what that would be like. But you found that once you got outside and started...
They talk.
You introduce a topic. And then because mm-hmm. you're not sitting there looking at them.
Right. Especially boys. I mean, boys don't really want to sit there directly as often. And they talk to each other. I mean, because the groups can be fairly large. So I would just move from, you know, pairs. Usually they would pair up two or three and talk. And we'd go all the way around the high school and walk. And I would just kind of tag along and listen to what they were talking about and join in and ask them about their families. And then as the weeks went on, you know, I knew more and more about mm-hmm. what was happening in their lives. And then if I did hear something that was concerning, or you could tell they were concerned about, then I could pull them on for a one-on-one session.
Definitely.
So that was great. And same thing with the book clubs. I was telling them a story a couple of weeks ago about a passage that the little girl just got so excited about, and it was just how people in our lives mold us, but that we're responsible for molding ourselves too, and mm-hmm. how much responsibility do we have for our outcome and our path in life. Is it just what happens to us, or do we take some ownership in that? And mm-hmm. that was part of the book. And the little girl, the little sixth grade girl, just got so excited. She was flapping her arms, and and she was just, I just love that so much.
Wow.
And we were able to talk about mm-hmm. all the things that were going on in their lives, from divorce, one that her dad was not in her life, and how that affects us, but how we still want to go on in our lives mm-hmm. and make ourselves, you know, have a happy,
wow.
healthy life.
And she may not have had that without the book modeling
right.
for her.
Right.
So you haven't mentioned about this new thing I've heard about with the songwriting group.
Oh,
so
yeah. We're starting that this week.
Tell us about the songwriting group.
Forgot about that for a second.
How fun is that?
Yes. So I was approached several months ago after a anxiety and depression discussion I'd had by a girl who she had. I don't think she'd mind me sharing this. She lost her father at 14 to suicide, and she started using music and songwriting to help her deal with everything she was going through. And she approached me wanting to volunteer to help students at Oak Knoll. So we have started, she talked to all of the sixth graders, and they have signed up. And she's going to be coming in during flex once a week for 8 weeks and helping the students put their own thoughts and feelings into songs. And she's going to put it to music and help them make a completed song. We're starting that on Thursday.
Again, it's an amazing way to express thoughts and feelings without sitting around the table with people looking at you and being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, Angie, too, just the fact that you have opened up your mind and your creativity to come up with these ideas to help kids, and you have been at your school for a while, and Becky and Melissa have joined you, and they have just tagged on to your passion for groups, and y'all are just doing some amazing work with that. So in a short amount of time, you looked at the barriers at your school, you came up with these ideas and program changes, and now you, I would say, are a model for running small groups. Whenever I go anywhere, I'm like, you've got to see these small groups ideas, because I just am not seeing them in other places. What are some tips that you can share with other school counselors on how they can go about to make these kind of things happen in their school if they're struggling to get small groups up and running?
I'll start. Mine is very cliche, but I don't know. It stuck with me over the last couple of years. John Gordon, I don't know if you're familiar with his work, but he's an author and a motivational speaker. I follow him on Instagram. You know, probably 2 years ago, I was reading, I can't remember what it was in, but something of his, and it said, just land the plane, and it completely stuck with me, and I was, you know, in the middle of the school year, and as we all know, things are happening, things are stressful, you put groups off, you put off things that you need to do, and it just, I remember going into work the next day, and I said, okay, I'm going to start it. I had been putting off, let's just say it was a group, because other things I was letting kind of take precedence. And so, honestly, my big tip is just do it. Just be flexible. You know, step outside of your comfort zone, because that's where we learn. And I just have seen some awesome plans within themselves come together with kids. All you need is kids.
Right.
And if you have your students that are involved and, you know, they want to be there, they may act like they don't, especially our age group. But I think in all the groups that we have been able to lead, they're sad when they're over. They're sad when the groups end. They're sad that we don't see them more than once a week with the small group setting. And so I just really think that just get started, you know, get in there and just get started and land the plane. I know it sounds really, really cliche, but it is so true.
It doesn't have to be a perfect flight. You might have the perfect lesson plans, but when the kids get in there, their needs are something totally different than what you planned for. And it might be, I'm playing off the cliche here, a bumpy flight and not what you expected, but that plane landed and those kids got something out of it. And guess what? You ran a group at the, you know, it was all
said
and done.
And I think, I know personally, I feel like, oh, you know, in the past, oh, I've got to have these perfect plans. I want everybody to love it and enjoy it and they want to come back. And it's not about me. It's not about, it's about us creating that space and that support, but allowing the kids to make that group happen and really to lead it where it's supposed to go.
Right. So what are other tips, Melissa? What do you have?
I know, I agree with everything that Becky said. Sometimes you just gotta go for it and jump in and just do it. And even if it's not perfectly sculpted out in your mind, let it go organically, because I think that's when some of the best things happen. Other tips, I would say, I do think group dynamics is important. We haven't really talked about that, but and that is where relationships come in. So I would, you know, I look at my needs assessment in terms of who kind of is needing what supports, and also who's going to work together. And I might talk with them ahead of time about that. I may talk with them about who else is in the group or already in it, because I think that is important. You don't want the group dynamics to then derail this great message that they're getting out from it. So that was one thing I've really particularly when I work with some of my boys, is I think about the group dynamics a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the needs assessment piece. You came in last year with sixth grade, mm-hmm. and so you're with a brand new group of kids, and you're a new counselor at this school. So mm-hmm. how did you go about putting that needs assessment together for parents and for students to see what the needs were of the program?
So Google Forms is an amazing tool.
It's a best friend
that will do it all for you. I set up the questions in a Google form. I did it as part of I was the incoming sixth grade counselor. I was brand new to school. All my students were new. Mm-hmm. So I went in and obviously did a introduction classroom lesson. Here's what I do as your school counselor. And as part of that, you know, I brought in laptops and had the students fill it out right there, the Google form. And then that is an easy way for me to access it. It puts it into an Excel or a Google slide, mm-hmm. Google Sheet. It's like the Excel version.
Yes.
The Excel version of Google puts it all in. I can sort it. I can sort who wants to be in a group, who doesn't, mm-hmm. what they want to be in it. Yes, you can pull pie charts from it. And so that was a great way. And I've just continued that. I went in the beginning of the seventh grade. I didn't have to do an intro lesson. I was more able to do like a core curriculum lesson. Mm-hmm. But the last 10 minutes were dedicated to a needs assessment, and I continued on some of the same questions so I could see that
longitudinal data
and growth within my students,
yes.
and I'll continue it into next year.
Love
too.
That. So again, using those data pieces to show your administrator as well. Here are the groups I'm running and why. Mm-hmm. And again, the old model would be, let's send this sheet home with some group names on it, and you check one off if you would like that and send it back in. Because again, those were groups that we were picking to do. So the way we do it with a comprehensive program is to let them dictate what the groups mm-hmm. are by the questions that you're asking. You also did a parent needs assessment mm-hmm. As you came in as a new sixth grade counselor. So how did you do that?
We did, and that was, again, it was a Google form as well that went out to our parents via, like, our communication system mm-hmm. with parents. And we got I'm trying to remember now, it's the beginning of last year, but close to 100 responses, which was mm-hmm. a good amount for our parents. We were asking them what some of the programs that they were interested in, that we were thinking of running more parent workshops and that kind of thing. What were the topics that they were interested in? What time of day was best for them for delivery? And then we've been able to act on some of those, whether it was academic planning. We had a social networking mm-hmm. one. We have done anxiety and depression, so we've been able to respond to their needs. Mm-hmm. It was also a great tool to then reach out to parents in a separate part of our counseling program, the advisory council. Mm-hmm. That was how we solicited some of our members for our advisory
right.
council, too.
And I will say that's another example, which is a totally different topic, but getting parents to come out to workshops. And we had been saying, well, parents aren't coming out anymore. We're running all these programs and they're not coming. So are we asking them what they want and what time of day? So mm-hmm. that parent needs assessment also has helped you all to jumpstart some evening workshops again and offering them topics that they want to learn about. Again, how do we know what their needs are if we aren't asking them? So mm-hmm. I love that y'all are using these needs assessments to frame every part of your program. Do y'all have any other tips for counselors and getting some small groups going?
Well, one thing I was thinking that I started this year, talking about lunches, very, very easy thing to do. I started hearing my sixth graders, they're feeding in from three large elementary schools, and I started hearing them say, oh, I don't have lunch with my best friend now. Mm-hmm. So I started, and I think you guys picked up on this too, having lunch in the courtyard. We have a beautiful little courtyard with a fountain at our school. And even though we do have lunch duty now, I did decide once a week that I would have lunch in the courtyard. And I put a sign-up sheet on their Schoology, their computer sign-up thing that they use. And they can fill that out and invite two or three of their friends to have lunch with me in the courtyard. And I did this once a week all through the fall. I stopped it over the winter because it's really cold.
Yeah.
But I'm going to start again after spring break. And again, it's a great way to have a, it's not a formal counseling group, but it's a great small little group. Friends can get together. And again, you just get to know your students. You're making those connections. It's very simple. I didn't even really ask permission. I just told our admin this is what I was going to do, and I wasn't going to be at lunch duty. But it's a great way, especially a sixth grade counselor, to get to know your students.
And that's a great way to reframe a duty into counseling activity.
Yes.
Because you're still at lunch with kids, but you're running small groups with them in the courtyard.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes.
So I was excited to hear that recently you all applied for a grant through a local organization to get some money to help support your small group program. So tell us about your grant money and what you're going to do with that.
So, yes, I applied for the Virginia Counseling Association grant to continue running small groups. I think I used most of our counseling department money this year. So, Melissa and Becky, sorry about that. You can use all of it for yourselves. And I used the data that I already had collected on the money that I had spent on my groups this year between all my stress buster activities, again, the make and take items, and all my art supplies. And I had calculated I spent around $570.
Wow.
And that's what I, over the past couple of years, I used all of that this year. But that's what I asked for, and I didn't get the grant for $600. They rounded
up
to $600. So over the next couple of years, I plan on continuing to buy more books for book clubs. Of course, the art supplies get used up, and the stress buster activities, you know, again, get used up each year. So this should keep me going for a while.
So do you have anything to add to that? If y'all want some of the money?
Yeah, plenty of department money too, so we can all be running for groups.
I think I am going to piggyback. I am very interested in the book club idea, and now knowing that we'll have that library, I think it's just, again, it's just another way to bring kids in who may not otherwise participate in a counseling group, and you can have you have these discussions about any number of things that characters in books go through, and just kind of how it relates to them. So again, it's not a perfect scripted out lesson plan. It's you're providing a safe space, you're making connections, and you're having a discussion where students are supporting each other, they're learning from each other, and sharing insights into their world. And that's really what it's all about.
See, this discussion has already inspired someone to try something new. And this is the part I love most about counseling, is that y'all are running your comprehensive program, but you still have autonomy as a school counselor with your group, with your caseload of kids, to run what is best for them. So I love that you're inspiring one another, but you don't have to all do exactly the same thing because your kids' needs are all very different. So thank you for sharing all of that. So we end every podcast with asking two questions. So the first question is, what are you reading right now? So we'll start with you, Melissa.
I am about 2 weeks away from giving birth.
So we have been very worried this whole time to see if we're going to make it through this podcast. And you did. But we only have still a few minutes left.
So I am studying up on childbirth. It's been a couple of years.
Becky, what are you reading?
I am currently, I just started Under Pressure, and it is a book that actually one of our 8th grade language arts teachers shared with our department, and then I think you shared it with some fellow counselors, just the epidemic of stress and anxiety. And so far, it is phenomenal. It's really awesome. In fact, I have some sticky notes and some spots that I'm actually going to include in my book club. That is not my book club book, but there are just some really great highlights that I thought, you know, this is something that I would love to get kind of some student feedback on. There's just some really great points, I think, for educators as a whole in that book.
Okay.
I would love to do an adult book club. Maybe that's something we could think about doing with our parents next year.
Great.
That's a good idea.
That's a great idea. Yes.
Sorry.
Somebody write that down.
Another idea just popped in here.
Yeah.
So, Angie, what are you reading right now?
I am reading, I'm going to look at my notes. I am reading, what am I reading?
You're reading
Love Works by Joel Mandy,
which I assigned you to read.
That's right.
You're currently reading.
I'm trying to finish that by Friday. I am in a book club with our colleagues in school. We've been doing that for several years. And we're reading Cutting for Stone, which I tried to get through several years ago, so I'm trying to reread that. And then I'm also rereading The Book Thief that I never got through years ago.
That's a great book.
It's so wonderful. So I'm trying that again. So I'm reading three different books right now.
I'm impressed.
Well, I need to finish them.
So, again, we sometimes get so busy and we think we don't have time for reading, but we all have talked about book clubs today that we're participating in socially and at work. And as school counselors, we all do a summer book that we all read together and all discuss. And we also break out in small groups and do book chats as well. So I think that's just an integral part. Not just for your students, but you've mentioned it for faculty. You've mentioned school book clubs, and we also do them as school counselors. So that's a underutilized, easy thing to do that you can bring groups of people together to have discussions about really important topics. And especially when it comes to school counseling, there's so many great reads out there right now that we could all have conversations about. And then lastly, which I think is so important, what do you all participate in for self-care? So Angie, we'll start with you this time.
The main thing that I do that I know people like to sleep till the last minute, but I have to get up early. I get up about 45 minutes before I really need to, and I get my coffee. I sit out on my screen porch. I have an electric blanket out there, so no matter how cold it is, I sit out there and watch the sun come up, drink my coffee. I just love it. And then I walk my dog, I read, as I said, and I do love to Netflix binge mysteries.
Oh, yes.
And podcasts. I love to listen
to podcasts. Yes, and we share similar tastes in books and Netflix managing. So thank you for your recent share, which I just started this week. Yeah. So good. Becky, what about you?
I love to be outside. I love to walk our puppy, 7-month-old Lab, so I'm halfway running, halfway walking. I have recently started taking bar classes.
Wow.
So I'm very sore. I think when I saw you last week, I was very sore at that professional development. But that I have loved. It's a great way to clear your mind. Love being with family, being with friends. I'm doing a great Bible study at our church. And then we have such a supportive department. I think that's self-care within itself,
definitely,
too, which has been awesome.
So, Melissa, as you mentioned, you have 2 weeks till the birth occurs.
No self-care.
So what self-care are you doing very quickly?
My self-care right now is probably sleeping.
Yes.
And really just spending time with friends and family. And it just dawned on me right now that we all three have labs as dogs.
Yes.
And I think that's the good self-care for all of us, is spending time outside with them. I'm looking forward to getting back into running after the baby, because that is kind of my, where I go to just zone out. And I've come up with some of like my best lesson plan ideas when I'm on a long run, and they and I just have time to think, and it's quiet. So I'm definitely looking forward to that in a couple months.
Good. Well, I have so enjoyed having these conversations with you today, and I hope that some counselors out there in our audience will get some good ideas from you and get inspired to get moving with some creative small group ideas, and also looking at some books they might want to start reading or indulging in their own self-care, just so that we can better serve our students. Thank you for joining us today here on Scope.